20. Cliff and the others were glad to get back into the warmer precincts of the bowl underground. They rested in a large view space that gave them warmth, yet through a broad portal gave a closer view of the vacuum flowers, as Irma termed them. They ate the food they carried, and the sill leading them brought water from a small delivery system lodged in the hard rock walls. The bowl's outer hull was intricately woven through with passages, rooms, narrow little living quarters, and shops for what looked like repairs. As well, they passed by warrens that seemed to be where the finger snakes lived and worked. In some of the shops, snakes wearing harnesses labored at rack arrays, doing metal and electronics work. They were intense little creatures of glistening, gunmetal blue skin, beady eyes focused at close range on implements usually smaller than a finger, a human finger, not the bigger boneless ones the snakes used.
"You know," Abe said, "it's kind of reassuring that in this incredible place they're making flanges and hex joints, pressure sleeves and shafts with ball joints."
"Engineering," Terry said, "is a universal."
Some of the snake teams were working now on a large, intricate wall. They worked with a fevered energy, clacking and hissing to each other, and slithering adroitly over copper arrays. This wall lay behind where the humans watched the dim landscape of the hull. Hull ice was thick here, and vacuum flowers lapped against the transparent portal. Cliff touched the window, and had to snatch his hand away at a sudden sharp pain. He feared it was so cold, his fingers would freeze to it. Quirt had said there were multiple vacuum layers in these transparent walls, but the cutting cold came through it.
"That's it," Abe said. "These corridors are below the mirror zone. We're at the edge of a big mirror area, too. This whole section of the bowl must be chilly."
It seemed so. So the land beyond was extremely cold, dotted with rock that formed roofs over areas of gray ice steeped in dark. Following Quirt's advice, Irma played her laser beam, set on dispersed mode, into those dark spaces. In this flashlight mode, they were surprised to see odd, ivory-colored things moving with agonizing slowness. Abe asked what these were.
"On our way here, we saw bizarre life forms feeding on ice, but those," Irma said,
"those slow creatures with mandibles and eye stalks, yes, like lobsters, but living in high vacuum and low temperatures."
Terry eyed the moving gray things.
"These shapes are amorphous, more like moving fluids." "Ice life," Quirt said, "kin to ice mines."
Irma said,
"So, you brought us here to—"
Quirt let the silence lengthen, then said,
"Sill want speak." "To ice mines." "What can we do?"
Irma asked.
"Ice mines speak to you."
Quirt made eye moves that might imply hope or expectation. It was still hard to tell.
"Won't they speak to you?"
Terry asked.
"Not speak adopted."
Irma said,
"You mean species brought on board the bowl?
Why not?"
"Ice mines old, want only new."
"You know, those blobs in the shadows are moving together, toward us,"
Abe said.
"Watchers," Quirt said, "allied with ice mines."
Cliff said,
"So you were ignored before,"
and saw that now the vacuum flowers were opening and turning. Why are those doing—"
Quirt gestured at the vacuum flowers that abandoned their slow sweep of the sky, dutifully tracking nearby stars for their starlight. They rotated on their pivot routes toward this transparent wall. The company fell silent as the flowers began to open fully from their tight paraboloid shapes that focused sunlight on their inner chemistry. Slowly they nosed toward the wall, where humans and Syl watched. As they did so, they blossomed into broad, white expanses, each several meters across.
"They're really large," Irma said. "Still hard to imagine. Plants that can live in vacuum and bring in starlight from over a large area. To feed. Quirt, did you mean these flowers provide energy for the whole biosphere living out there on the hull?"
Quirt simply gave eye signals, apparently a yes. Then the Syl said,
"Commanded by cold minds,"
and would say no more. The thin glow of the jet brimmed above the horizon here, and some flowers seemed focused permanently on that. It seemed an unlikely source of much energy, for the plasma was recombining and emitting soft tones in blue and red. On the other hand, that was steady, though weak, and some flowers had perhaps evolved to harvest even such dim energies. They were all transfixed as the radiators spread open and completed their pivot toward the humans. There was silence broken only by the faint sound of air circulating, as the field of flowers, Cliff swung his head around to count over 100 within view, then began to pulse with a gray glow. Behind the flower field the stars still wheeled, cutting arcs in the black. The humans stood, mutely watching, their heads tilted up to see the spreading flowers, who in turn clung to the rotating hull. The gray glow built slowly, the whole flower display assuming a shape like a giant circle flecked with light, staring at them. Cliff felt a chill wash over his skin that was not from the temperature. This is truly alien. A pattern began to emerge. In the dim light, their eyes had adjusted, and so the brighter flower circles made blotchy spots, while the darker flowers accented a contrast, and the entire array began to form a speckled image. A picture came into view. Irma gasped. "It's Beth's face! Again!" The picture was crude, because there were fewer pixels to be had from the flowers, but still Cliff found it unsettling. He gazed at the cartoon of Beth Marble while others talked on. Finally, he said, "Reasonably close, too. Whoever commands these vacuum flowers knows the method they used with the mirror zones. They're using this to get our attention." Court gave a rustle of agreement. "Ice mines." "At least her lips aren't moving," Terry said. "That gave me the creeps."
"So, no message," A.B. said. "Just a calling card."
Court looked around and pointed to the wall behind them. The snake team was still working, this time with some armatures like Waldo's. They had somehow extruded a flat tank from the wall, and snake-like machine arms were completing it. This was not repair, but construction. They worked by coaxing features from a substrate that simmered with flashes of orange light. The whole working team was laboring with new members. A big, lizard-like thing of crusted hide had four tentacles, each of which alone was larger than a finger snake, fissioning into more small ones that snakes did not have. Cliff watched one use fingernails, too, that deformed into helical screwdrivers, snub pliers, a small hammer. It was trimming away and adjusting features freshly drawn from the wall. Cliff glanced back at the Beth portrait, still frozen in a smile. When he turned, the work team was slithering away across the wall as the central oval they left brimmed with orange glows. Letters, and then words, seemed to drift to the surface of the wall, as if bubbling up from deep ocean water.
"It's English," Terry said. "How do they know?"
"Ice mines," Court said.
Across the sill's face, and across those of the other sill with them, who had been quiet all along, the skin stretched and warped, framing the eyes. Did this mean joy? Fear? Impossible to tell, but there were no other signs of concern in the body, which remained still. The script ran slowly. "We have ranged the deep and kept history near. We are not of you, carbon children of thermonuclear heat and light. We ride here to preserve the greatness you have found now. Long ago we shaped this traveling structure when the warm folk came to us from deep within the whirlpools that girdled our suns. The warm folk gave us tools to build large. Some of us stayed among the comets, but we here have clung to the bowl. We live through eons of time, and so have seen the many thousands of faces intelligence can assume. We dealt with them in turn. We are the bowl memory."
Irma said, "This looks like a prepared lecture."
A.B. nodded. "Must be. They've used it before. I guess if there are thousands of years between passes nearby other stars, you work up an all-purpose greeting."
Terry smiled.
"Boilerplate, huh? This doesn't look like a greeting, though. More of an announcement, I'd say."
"Intended to awe, yep," Cliff said.
"As if this place didn't impress us enough. Their English is good," Irma said. "They must have access to the folks' experience. But are we missing a point? These ice mines claim they built the bowl."
"Shaped it. Designed it, maybe," Terry corrected her. "After intelligent warm life found them,
After they ranged through the solar system, and then the planets of this other little companion sun, after they worked their way into, would you say, a mutual Oort cloud, and found these forests of super-cold life, and the ice mines used them for engineering.
Or they could be bragging, Cliff said. Nobody laughed. They watched as the words faded, and a long series of still pictures followed. Each came in at an easy pace, as though there were all the time in the world to show images of planets, crisp and dry, cloudy and cool, cratered, yet with shimmering blue atmospheres, and stars, sometimes in crowded clusters, at times seen close up and going nova in bright, virulent streamers, or in tight orbits around unseen companions that might be neutron stars or black holes. Wonders the Bowl had seen while driven forward by its jet. Portraits of the early Bowl years, Cliff gathered. The jet flaring and trembling in tangled knots of ruby and sharp yellow as the vast cup got underway. For these ones that Quirt termed ice mines, there was indeed all the time in the world. The screen visions streamed on, and the humans sat with backs against the rough walls to watch them. Strange landscapes loomed.
They call us Warm Life,
Quirt added as the screen showed an ice world. Against a black sky, odd lumps moved, in a lake lit by a smoldering red light. There were dune fields, ponds, channels. The lake sat in a convoluted region of hills cut by valleys and chasms. Abe said, I'd say that looks kind of like Titan, Saturn's moon.
There was small life there, Irma said. Microbial, some pond scum, nothing more.
There are moving forms on that screen, Terry said.
For this view, the screen showed sequential shots. The lumps seemed like knots of fluid, assisted by sticks that crossed through the globular bodies.
Blobs that somehow used tools like rods?
These coherent colloids moved across bleak fluid that might be hydrocarbons like ethane. On the beach, the lumps moved ashore with a viscous grace, pulling themselves forward with extruded feelers that managed the sticks.
They're clustering around that domed thing that looks like a termite mound, Irma said. Even blobs can build.
Those forms we saw in the shadows out there,
Terry gestured to the ice plains beyond,
might have some connection to these, except these are on a planet.
Life adapts, Irma said.
A big leap from a Titan-like cold around 100 degrees Kelvin with high atmospheric pressure to those vacuum flowers and the rest of it, all holding on to the outside hull.
A big jump, Terry said. But there must have been incremental steps, and they had billions of years to do it.
By this time, the image had faded, replaced by a view of a dense jungle. This one, though, had spiral trees, whipped by high winds against a purple sky of shredded clouds. The stilled storm had a big beast in the foreground, something like a dirty brown groundhog, its head tucked in against the wind. The show went on, and then on some more. After a while, even exotic alien landscapes became repetitious. Blue-green mountain ranges scoured by deep gray rivers, placid oceans brimming with green scum, arid tan desert worlds ground down under heavy brooding brown atmospheres.
All planets, Terry said. They're not showing us comets, not showing us themselves.
Ice worlds aplenty beneath starry skies, grasslands with four-footed herds roaming as volcanoes belched red streamers in the distance, oceans with huge beasts wallowing in enormous crashing waves, places hard to identify in the swirling pink mists. Life adapts indeed. After a while, the slideshow was over, and more English words appeared.
You Warm Life now learn to journey from star to star. We have seen your kind before. You expand outward at great cost to you, for fleeting quick life reasons. Most Warm Life comes in small ships, as do you. The dream of this bowl enticed us with its capacity. Its slow progress fits our minds, our style. Over eons, we have seen little need to change its design. Through voyages, we gain passengers warm and cold. This is only part of us. Other ice mines live elsewhere in the bowl's shadow.
We deep life are one in fluidity. We address you now because this is an unusual time. This bowl approaches a fresh world, as do you. We have no reason to intervene in warm life affairs. We act when the bowl faces threats to its stability and endurance. You will help us.
We will, Abby said. They're probably listening in some way, you know, Cliff said sternly. Abby blinked and said loudly, Ah, yes, we will, if we know how.
Irma stood and gazed out at the dim Icelands where the vacuum flowers still held Beth's image. She fanned her laser and said,
Those blobs, they're moving all right. Maybe these cold mines keep those forms around because they're related by mutual evolution? Terry asked. Hard to know. If these cold mines are as old as they say, there's not much that can be new to them.
Cliff said, And even less that's interesting.
Liquid life forms? He thought. Trying to think on huge timescales was hard. Maybe warm life is just a buzzing, frantic irritant to them. And there is something in their manner dealing with us warm life that suggests immense distance. These things had probably evolved in the outer fringes of solar systems. They could travel on comets, maybe, bouncing from star to star. So maybe they freely roamed the galaxy, while the most advanced warm life consisted of single-celled pond scum. None of this was reassuring.
What did you have in mind? Irma addressed the screen.